3. Claire, you were saying about this business of being put into these awful rags when you arrived, and yet the pictures one sees are of children and women in these striped uniforms.
That was not in Auschwitz. That was in working camps. So may not see Schindler's List having these children with the Red Cross, under the Red Cross protection, and having striped uniform on them. I don't know where they got it from, because I had striped uniform with a number when I was in Camp Mauthausen after Auschwitz. That was working camp. And then we had this striped pyjamas, because there's nothing under that. And that was really for no way escaping, because that's all what we have. And there's the numbers on it.
Could I ask you something very personal? You know, if you were all women together,
yes.
When women were sort of menstruating...
Yes, nobody had menstruation. Nobody. How is that happened? I don't know. It might be the food that we had been eating was something in it to stop it. Or I heard from doctors, when somebody below the normal amount of nourishment, then women stop having periods, because these girls who is getting so extremely thin, they're having this anorexic problem, they don't have periods either.
So did you start your periods?
Before we were taken away, about 2 months earlier, I would start having it. And there was nothing. Well after the war, after we came out of concentration camp.
Also, did you find in the huts that you had lice?
No, because we were every so often went under a disinfectant shower spray, and the rags had to leave it in a pile. And other pile of rags was given instead, which one was already disinfected, which one was smell of disinfectant. So it was constantly disinfected all the time. And that was between going in with this rag, take it off, have a shower, disinfect paper, front of these German soldiers, they were doing that. And completely naked, and then you have to walk in front of them, and then they still keep every time, I think it was once a week, go to the right and go to the left, every time. And every time somebody was going to the right or the left, I don't know, because it's different time, different way, the paper disappeared. So what happened to them, I don't know. Because they keep getting less and less number of people in each of these barracks. I mean, when Auschwitz was emptied out, when I left, there was hardly people in each of these, altogether very few. And then finally everybody going to C lager, to the B lager, and you know, these streets of... barracks, and then it was just really very, very few. But I know for sure when we went to this place where I was, Camp Mauthausen, that was empty, the Auschwitz was emptying out, that was the time, was about almost 400 people the most, because our number in the workplace was given from 1. To the end of the number of paper was there. And my number was 300 and something, this here in this Red Cross document.
Did you have any idea where the people were disappearing to?
No. Don't know.
You didn't know about the gas chambers or the...
No, I still didn't know anything. I had no idea. You didn't know. But I didn't. I didn't know. I keep smelling this, and I just thought that's the way it goes, you know, because those days Pepper did burn coal, so Pepper did see chimneys, private houses or manufacturing, you know, these chimneys to have. So I had no idea I never had this second thought, is something different from what normally chimneys usually having this smoke coming from. Because those days, you know, there's a lot of most people had proper fires, even for cooking. Most people had this proper cooker, a kind of cooker which needed to put wood in it.
Mm. Did you ever see anyone being beaten?
I seen from the distance, I wasn't near enough. I don't know what was going on. And when we arrived, shortly afterwards, there was a lady who had a baby in there, because between the two rows of boxes where Pepper was staying, it was a bit higher, a stone, full length of the barrack, a stone, don't know, say half a yard wide and about half a yard high, a stone division between the two sides of this barrack. And I think it was happening middle of the night, because I waked up with some screaming. But it wasn't near to this boxes where I was. I had no idea what it is. And as I was a child, I didn't know what's going on. And then I just heard it later, somebody, you know, women was talking, and I heard somebody said, "She's gone as well as the baby, you know, none of them here now."
And these German guards, you know, who were dealing with the change of clothes,
yeah.
How did they behave towards the naked women?
Well, there's so many of them, you know, they was doing their duty, really. I mean, sort of, they didn't see these women as women, really. Because no hair, nowhere, and like skeletons, really, they were very thin. I mean, I think just walking humans, they seem, you know. I don't think they looked at them as women, quite honestly.
Something else, you know, when you arrived, you mentioned that Dr. Mengele
was
there.
At the gate, but I didn't know that time who was at the gate, and I really didn't know what importance he was until well after the war. When I heard, you know, people start making documentaries and talk about it. And this name didn't ring the bell, because while I was there, nobody named anybody. I mean, nobody knew what the name of these higher rank German soldiers is, or the lower one. They didn't know Pepper. And nobody looked at their faces as well, so it's very hard to recognize them, because Pepper was still scared, you know, when they was around, they tried to be unseeable as possible. So I quite understand when Pepper was longer spell of time in Auschwitz, like the Pepper from Poland or other countries went earlier, and they was already grown ups. If they had the interest on to look at their faces, I don't know, but I was a child. I was trying not to look anywhere and look down the floor, you know, when they was nearby. I was too scared. So I wouldn't possibly, and quite honestly, I saw most of these German soldiers with quite good looking youngish men, well kept, you know, hair nicely trimmed and very clean, you know, they was looking very well kept. You know, how can you recognize them years later when they are old men and in a t-shirt or something? It's very hard. As I can imagine the older generation who might be really some reason or other, they see them often and had a good look at their faces, but I used to know any of these German soldiers as around, I was always been looking at the floor, and then I was too scared to look at them. That was it's the truth.
Were you a mixed sort of nationality group in your barracks?
No, this was all from Hungary. But you see, Hungary one time was bigger. So if they came from which is now called Czechoslovakia or Romania or wherever, you know, surrounding other countries and surround Hungary, there is pieces of land is now doesn't belong to Hungary anymore. So therefore people will speak Hungarian. So it's possible they was from other areas, but an awful lot of people around the surrounding countries do speak Hungarian because the border been changed back and forth. Yeah. So I don't know what is the real border of Hungary and what the real border of the other countries, because that used to be going back and forth. But I know for sure it's an awful lot. Now in Israel I have an office which is called the Hungarian speaking office, you know, for advice. Now this paper could be from Romania or even Poland, Czechoslovakia, you know, from these other parts where it used to be in Hungary before. So as long as they speak Hungarian in that office in Hungarian language, they get some information, whatever they want to know, you know, these new immigrants.
So did you have to work in Auschwitz?
Not in Auschwitz, but after Auschwitz we had to work in Camp Mauthausen.
How long were you in Auschwitz before you were transferred?
I don't know. It's this document says when we were transferred.
Yes, you actually went on the 3rd of December, 3rd of November, to from Auschwitz to Mauthausen, mm-hmm. didn't you? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because we didn't know. The Red Cross knows what happened. That's why they got these documents. But those days, we did not know dates. We didn't know what day it is.
Did you know anything about the factory near in Auschwitz connected, the Buna?
No. No. Now, I would like to tell you what happened before we left Auschwitz. Now, one of these occasions, when was the, I think it was 2 days before, before we went to the Camp Mauthausen, before we went really in this ritual, have to have the clothes, leave it in a pile, disinfect it, go through and have this disinfected shower, and get another disinfectant rag. And every time that ritual was happening, he'd always never have to go to the right and to the left. In different occasions, it's different happened, and it's sometimes the paper disappeared from my sight, who went to the left, or sometimes when they went to the right. I'm talking about all these rituals that was going on roughly weekly, you know, quite often. That's why we didn't have no lice or anything. Anyway, we didn't have no hair. This occasion, I think it was just 2 days before we left Sea Lager and went to the next one, which one I think was B Lager, where from we actually went to Camp Mauthausen. There was again a time when every time we had this ritual, I always went to the same, either to the right or the left, with my mother. This occasion, I always went in front of her. This occasion, I went to the right, and by the time I came to look, she wasn't there again. So I went to a barrack and was bolted. You know, you could hear it. It's a bolt outside being put on. And that was start getting dark. It wasn't dark, but it just started getting dark. And that was next to the washroom. I'm still in Stillager then. Went to this washroom. We wasn't in the washroom. We was just, I know, because it's been long enough, I knew. I'm in a barrack next to this washroom, on the right of this washroom. Among paper, I haven't seen my mother. So, a little while later, I recognized the back of the, I knew at the front was bolted. I was looking at the back of this barrack, and I was hanging about and tried to push it open. And I recognized it open. I thought it might be open for using the toilet like before, you know, these buckets. So, was nobody at the door who watching it. But everybody who was there, one of us, you know. If nobody was there watching it. So I pushed that door a bit more open, and I didn't see anybody. I still had my shoes, what I came with, which wasn't laced up, because those days children's shoes was like that, a bit higher, above the ankles, and laced up. If you remember, those days, just in children's shoes like that. And no lace in it. So I was still walking in this. I went out, and I went right outside, and I haven't seen anybody, but I heard voices. So obviously couldn't have been the voices in the washroom, because it's all, you know, when after the selection, nobody went in the washroom, you know, that was the usually going like this. Everybody goes into the hut, you know, these barracks. So I would start going, it was such a muddy, you know, and all of a sudden I hear whistling, shouting. I understood German then, you know, because we had to start learning German words before I left school. So I understood these command words. To stop, like halt, you know. And then stop before I shoot. And I wasn't stopping, but I stepped out of my shoes because it was stuck in the mud. And then I just ran into this washroom. And in these washrooms was kept like dustbins here, these metal dustbins used to be in England. There was under a stone, it's like it's just a platform, and underneath like a coal bunker, you know. But front had nothing on it, just shoved in these dustbins. There used to be the food was in it daytime, and it was clean this time for stored for next day. I just ran into this washroom because I keep hearing this whistling and shouting, you know, going on. And I was just running, and I didn't know where I'm running. I was just running and into one of these dustbins. And I was just sitting in it and tried to pull the top back on top of it. And I was there, and I heard them shouting across this, several of them, shouting across, they actually shoot as well somewhere, you know. And even bang this bunker, not the dustbins inside, but several of them, bang this bunker, come out before I shoot. But I wasn't moving. I wasn't breathing practically. But I don't know how long I was there because I heard them talking in German and didn't understand, you know. And they were going most likely to one end to the other, this washroom, because they were same long as these barracks, you know. And both ends have a gate, like door. So they most likely came in and out for a few times, you know. And they thought they lost me. And then they start shouting in the next block, most likely asking who was running in there. But my shoes were stuck in the soil in before this washroom. So they wasn't sure where I disappeared, because maybe I stepped out of it, they thought I stepped out of it to no further clue. But I don't know how many more barracks had paper in it further down. But anyway, it was, by then it was quite dark. And I was sitting in this cold container for a very long time. I don't know how long. Because all of a sudden I start hearing voices, you know, people came to a washroom, can't become allowed to use the washroom. Well, you can't have a wash, but you can wash your hand and face and drink water. And I heard people which was talking, and I understood this was Hungarian language, so this is definitely when the gate opened from the barrack to come out. I was still there for a bit, and then I couldn't get out, I was so stiff. And then finally I managed to get out. I don't remember how, but I know when I came out I couldn't get up. I was crawling on my hands and knees because my legs wasn't holding me, you know. And then somebody asked me what's wrong with me. I wouldn't dare say what. I just said, you can't get up, please help to get up. And then everybody was so weak, you know, and then two of them tried to help me to get up. I couldn't get up. So I had to sit for a bit to get my legs back to life again. And finally I managed to get up. And then but that was just the last minute, because then again was whistling to finish, have to get out of the washroom. So I just managed to walk to the next barrack, and I would start shouting again my mother's name. And she was right there, and as I went in the first box, you know, so it was together again. I feel this time I was nearly finished, because if they would not pass these containers and start pulling them out, then I would have been fined. So this was really the event I just find it the most terrible among whatever was happening, you know, because it was really very near. I was finished, really. And then we were taken to this Camp Mauthausen.
How are you? Was that far away?
I don't know. Really, quite honestly, I don't know how we was got there. I don't remember the transportation. Honestly, don't remember what happened from that time until we was actually given the strike uniform with the numbers and been told they were going to call our names out twice a day, call our numbers out twice a day to count us. So better remember our numbers, which one was on that strike uniform. This is the next I remember, and I remember was warm, because by then getting very cold in Auschwitz. And I remember it was reasonably warmish inside that building. And at last we had something, it was looked like a pyjamas, really, was no underwear or anything. But at least was complete clothes. And give us sort of wooden sole boots. It's like the clogs, but the top wasn't wood, was some material or leather even, I don't know, but that can be laced up in a very thick wooden sole and heels. So that was reasonably warm because that was, it was snow in that place by where the family arrived, it was snow in that area. And so as we were walking to work and back in 5x5 with the German soldiers either side walking and with these Alsatian dogs kept on leash, really, you know, not loose. And this was started. Every night we went to work and came back in the morning in a factory where we had a plate of soup, which one was more water than anything, with a little bit of cabbage leaves and a little bit of potatoes here and there in it. I don't know how we had the energy to work.
What sort of work did you have to do, Claire?
That was machinery. The place where we was, because everybody was taken, all of us. I mean, it's 400, nearly 400 of us, because the numbers went up to almost 400. Everybody was working different places, but some of us worked in a factory where they was making cotton wools of all sorts. Cotton wools in a great big bales where I was. It was coming in tubes from the other building, white cotton wools. And I was handling a machine which was terribly modern, because I only needed to put the sack underneath, which one was sort of, not material sack, sort of like candle wax would be on it, you know, and white thing, you painted that white was coming off. I don't know what sort of bags was that, big ones. And I had to put one by one, as the machine was turning round, I was standing on a platform which one was turning round. And that had to do hours and hours more till the morning. I don't know how, I mean, I was only 12 and a half then. I don't know how I had the energy, really. And then you at the right time, you have to press the right note, because otherwise it would be an accident. It has been said, you know. So this came in that cotton wool, then I had to press the other note to close it, and another note which is throw it flat on the ground. And then it's a conveyor belt which was taken at somewhere, I don't know where. And that's constant, and standing on that platform and going around as well. And really, it's just the survival feeling in paper, you know, because I was so tired and sleepy all the time, and just feel like to sit down, but couldn't, you know. But warm there.
How many hours would you have been doing that?
I don't know, because it was already light when we left. It was dark when we left, and it was light when we left. We didn't know time or day. What the date is, you know. And people was working in different places. And once I was really so unwell, I had to sit down because I felt I would fall. And we had to go to toilet when the German soldiers collect us when we go to toilet. Now, the time when he was coming collect us to work, I was to go to toilet, I couldn't pass the door because I was feeling so unwell. This man told me to go across the other side, where this pipe coming from, the other side, because on the window you could see where is it coming from, which one was just a very short distance. So I went out on the gate of this workroom, a big workroom on the first floor, you could see on platform, wasn't no something else. I don't know, very complicated. So I went across the other door, and there were some women there, and they gave me something to drink, most likely it was something strong, you know, most likely, not wine, something stronger than that, you know. And then I couldn't get up, I was sitting there for a while, you know, and somebody came back with a slice of bread and something on it, I don't know, some some food. I don't know what was it. Some bread was on it. And I was eating that slice of bread. And that German soldier came back and I don't know what they were doing. The captain saying, heraus, you know, so back, you know. So I was going with the bread. And everybody who's seen me says, oh, how lucky I am, you know. I was eating, you know. And straight to this machine because it was all clicking, the machine, and it's not handled, you know.